WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Last week's riots in South Central Los Angeles have touched off a debate about President Bush's domestic policy. Critics say that the Bush administration has no domestic agenda, that the problems of the inner city are largely the result of government neglect. President Bush's press secretary, Marlon Fitzwater, earlier this week said the social welfare programs of the 60s and 70s were responsible for the riots. We called sociologist Christopher Jenks to talk with him about tackling urban social problems. Jenks teaches at Northwestern University and is currently a visiting scholar at the Russell Sage Foundation. He's the author of the new book, Rethinking Social Policy, Race, Poverty, and the Underclass. Jenks said that when you look at the programs of Lyndon Johnson's Great Society that have survived, most of them are widely supported.
The big programs of the Great Society fall into really three groups. One is the educational programs, Head Start, the Pell Grants to help kids go to college, loan programs to help kids go to college, Upward Bound, the Job Corps, things like that, which I don't think either Fitzwater or anybody else thinks have exacerbated our problems. In fact, almost everybody approves of those kinds of programs that improve educational opportunity. Then there are a whole set of programs that have to do with improving health. Although Medicaid is a very expensive program, I don't think anybody thinks that helping poor people go to the doctor and get hospital care is exacerbating the problems of the inner city. In fact, most people would probably say the opposite. And then the last set of programs are programs like the housing allowances and food stamps and so forth that help people whose income is too low to make ends meet to get food on their table and keep a roof over their heads and so forth. Those programs are a little more controversial, but again, they by and large are very few people have ever really tried to make a case that giving people rent vouchers so that they could move into a better house was somehow making them either poorer or more criminal or worse parents or any of that sort of thing. So it's really welfare that everybody's mad about.
What would you say has been the legacy of the Reagan administration and now the Bush administration when it comes to urban policy? Senator Patrick Moynihan was quoted as saying, "You could be a U.S. senator for the last 3 years without knowing there was any Bush domestic agenda." Do you agree with his observation?
I think that's essentially correct. I mean, the Bush administration did have a group that got together to think about whether they should propose anything new to deal with the problems of persistent poverty in the United States, and that group essentially concluded that nothing should be proposed, but there was some talk about it, and it was decided that it was either politically not advantageous or that the programs were too costly or both. So I think basically Moynihan is right. The Reagan administration tried to scale back a lot of these programs, and the Bush administration has concentrated on doing other things and tried to ignore the whole problem.
President Bush is most recently quoted as saying he wants to give people a piece of the action. Can you translate that for us?
I think I would translate that into I would like to be on the side of poor people as long as it doesn't cost any money. Until you say what action you have in mind, those things don't mean much. Now, some of the Bush administration's initiatives seem to me not bad ideas. I mean, the effort to get more poor people's participation in public housing, for instance, seems to me a good thing to do. That's something that Jack Kemp has been interested in for a long time and has pushed, but has gotten only rather faint-hearted support from the White House on. If the explosion in Los Angeles sort of moves some of those Kemp initiatives to the top of the agenda, that would certainly be a good thing.
When talking about the needs of the urban poor today in the 90s, and these are people that weren't helped by either the New Deal or programs of the Great Society, do you think it's time to really redesign a whole new set of programs and policy aimed at the poor in cities today?
I think we do need a drastically new approach to some of these issues, not all of them, but some of them. And particularly, I think we need a new approach to the problem of helping single mothers who are trying to support their families. I mean, I think everybody hates the welfare system. Everybody's been cursing it for at least 30 years. And indeed, the programs that everybody talks about now to try to get more welfare mothers into the labor force were begun in 1967, was the first congressional set of programs to do this, which was in the heyday of the Great Society. And already we were trying to encourage more welfare mothers to acquire the skills they needed to go to work. But I think that whole that approach needs to be rethought, and we need to begin thinking about getting single mothers into the labor force, not just by relying on job training, which has very limited benefits, some but not great ones, and instead recognize that most single mothers could be working, but they can't support their families on what they can earn at the moment. $5 an hour is just not enough to support a mother and a couple of children, either in Los Angeles or in most other places. And we need to make sure that in addition to their earnings, these single mothers are getting child care and getting Medicare so that their medical bills are getting paid and getting the same kind of rent vouchers that welfare recipients often get, so that it pays to go to work. And we have to give up the idea that sort of once people go to work, we're going to abandon them to the free market, and somehow they'll be able to take care of themselves on minimum wage jobs.
I'm speaking with Christopher Jenks, and he's currently a visiting scholar at the Russell Sage Foundation. And he's just written a book called Rethinking Social Policy, Race, Poverty, and the Underclass. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. I'm speaking with Professor Christopher Jenks. What do you see as the proper role of the federal government in designing and implementing an urban policy? What role do you think they should play?
Well, it seems to me pretty clear from the history of the last 30 or 40 years that the federal government does have to take the lead in this. There was, I think, a certain amount of feeling during the last 12 years that somehow the states would be able to take a much larger role in the development of social policy. I think one thing we learned during the last 12 years is the states really can't do that. The main reason they can't do it is that the states are constantly in competition with each other to sort of have lower taxes than their next-door neighbors and to sort of try to lure industry from other places and so forth. So there's a kind of beggar-your-neighbor approach. So I think it's really got to be the case that if we're going to do anything in this area, the federal government's got to take the lead. Now, that doesn't mean the federal government has to take sole responsibility for it, but it's got to be the sort of architect that puts the pieces together, even if those pieces involve major roles for states and cities and even neighborhoods.
How much do you think a new urban policy should deal with the issue of crime, and whether the choice is between increasing a police presence within the inner city or developing new kinds of policing that involves the community, and whether the issue of trying to preserve inner city communities is as important as education or jobs or any of those other issues we've talked about?
I think it's a hugely important issue, and I think the sense that this is out of control in a lot of these neighborhoods is palpable, and it's terrifying for a lot of people, and understandably so. The problem is that I don't think at this point anybody has any idea really what to do. It's not like the welfare problem where I think reasonable people could say, okay, they may disagree about what the right thing to do is, but there are a number of possible ways to go that would make significant improvements. So I think we have to be much more open-minded about trying out a lot of different things because everybody runs against crime. There's no disagreement between Democrats and Republicans or anybody else about that. And having run against crime for 100 years, we haven't figured out what the solution is.
How do you think programs, even policies, can be designed to address some of the more intangible parts of poverty, whether it's urban or rural or even suburban. And I'm talking about things like a sense of despair or a sense of alienation. And these feelings, I think, profoundly affect one's quality of life. Is it even possible to think about programs that can do that?
Well, obviously, man doesn't live by bread alone. He lives a lot on hope. And where hope comes from is always an elusive question. You know, it's not easy to figure out how it is that you sort of instill hope in people who have lost it. But one thing that seems fairly clear is that we're on a track where over the last 20 years, the sort of growth in the economy has been very slow compared to earlier times. I mean, not the economy as a whole is growing because the population is growing, but the productivity of workers hasn't been going up in the way that we're used to. And that means there's less expectation that things are going to be better in the future for a very large proportion of the population. This is not just the poor. This is if you look at the real incomes of people in the middle of the income distribution, they didn't improve during the 80s. The improvement was mostly sort of for people near the top. And that is demoralizing. There's no question that it's especially so if your situation is really bad. I mean, people get discouraged and depressed and so forth.
Well, I know that we've touched on this a little bit earlier, but perhaps I can even get you to summarize what it is you think should be done, and if it's a matter of reviving the economy.
Well, clearly we need, the key to most things is a somewhat more rapid rate of economic growth. There's no question about that, because almost anything that one would like to do to help the poor is going to cost money, and then the question is going to arise, where is that money going to come from? And if we have a growing economy, that money is going to be a lot easier to find than if it has to come out of a relatively stagnant or even shrinking economy. So that's sort of central to a lot of this. If we could push up the rate of productivity growth to 2% a year from 1% a year, an awful lot of things would take care of themselves, to some extent at least, as a result. That kind of growth, I would argue, requires a fairly substantial change in the way management deals with workers and that kind of thing. And that's not an easy thing to alter. It's not a matter of changing the interest rate or doing something just to reduce the federal deficit or that kind of thing. It really requires a change in the habits of people who run organizations. That in turn means changing the habits of the people who work in those organizations. So it's a slow process, but I think that can be done. Now, the other obvious thing is that, when we start making social policy, we have to have policies that encourage people to behave in the ways that we approve of. And we've had a number of policies that didn't do that, of which sort of welfare is the most obvious and most unpopular. We believe in work. We want people to work, and we have a policy that doesn't reward work. Well, that's obviously silly. And you can't expect to get decent levels of support for single mothers when you devise a policy that sort of flies in the face of values that most Americans believe in.
Do you think that what happened in Los Angeles last week will get politicians, will get the public to rethink social policy in a serious way?
I would be very surprised if that happened in the short run, because this is an election year, and rethinking anything in an election year is an incredibly difficult thing to do. In an election year, what people do is they trot out the familiar and say it'll solve whatever problem has come along, so that the Republicans will fall back on whatever they've been talking about and say there's the answer, and the Democrats will fall back on their familiar solutions. On the other hand, I do think that over the slightly longer run, this sort of explosion may help get these issues sort of back on the agenda. A lot of that depends on what happens in November. It's hard imagine that Republicans will want to make dealing with urban problems a sort of centerpiece of a second Bush administration. There's certainly no indication in the first one that that was a high priority for them. On the other hand, if Democrats win, I think, for better or for worse, it would be almost impossible for them to avoid trying to grapple with these issues in a major way. How well they'll do it remains to be seen, but I think they're likely to think they have to try.
Christopher Jenks, thank you for joining us on Fresh Air today.
Thank you.
Christopher Jenks is a visiting scholar at the Russell Sage Foundation and the author of Rethinking Social Policy. This is Fresh Air.